Good afternoon. You're listening to Jazz 91.9 WCLK, Atlanta's Jazz Station. This is Jay Edwards with Jazz Tones. Our special guest today, none other than the great saxophonist Eric Alexander. I've been a follower of him for quite some time, and his tone and his great music. He's originally from Seattle, Washington, and he went to Indiana University, and he went to College William Patterson in Jersey, and he set a legacy for himself by extending the great music of the giants of great music in saxophone. He played with Charlie Erlin, the mighty stomper. He's admired a number of players, and he's collaborated with a great, you might say, pianist that I admire too, Mr. Hazeltine. And I'd like to welcome you, Eric. How you doing?
I'm great, Jay. Thanks for having me.
And I just want to thank you so much for taking the time in your busy schedule. And you've built upon the work of some of the great saxophonists of the past and really extended it. But you didn't tell me, I had to read about you, that you had written a Jazz Secrets ebook, the improvising with the whole step triad combination scale.
Well, I didn't know that you wanted that information. You're going to have to be more forthcoming with your request. Actually, that's not the only ebook I've as a matter of fact done. I think at this point three or four of them. I must say I'm particularly pleased with myself for getting those out because, you know, compared to other educational material that people are able to get online, I think they might be a little better. The guy that was the web host, he was very diligent in terms of making sure that they were exceptional and interactive and very clear. And that was really the point of the books anyway, sort of to demystify, you know, some of the harmonic quandaries that musicians in their formative years have, you know, trying to figure out how to play over a certain type of progression or how to do this or that. A lot of times they're looking for, you know, a magic pill. It really isn't a magic pill, but it's more about understanding how to look at things and break it down into the easiest components of the concept, then you can kind of absorb it quickly. It's not, you know, one of the problems many teachers have is they make everything very mysterious and harder than it needs to be. And so I wanted to, you know, be a counterbalance to that.
Yeah, you were very explicit about enlarging the palette of modern harmonic sounds to play over both simple and more complex chord progressions. And, you know, I study music. And one of the things I liked about your sound is the way that you're able, you have your own tone after studying all these different giants. I mean, John Coltrane and the rest of them. And you started off on alto. Really, you started as a classical pianist and moved to alto, then to
clarinet
tenor.
First. Actually, I played clarinet. But
clarinet,
short,
really?
Short-lived. I was so bad they kept demoting me, and I ended up on contrabass clarinet. You know, I was almost in the junkyard, and then I went to saxophone.
I can't even imagine you being in the junkyard.
Well, you know, a lot of what people think of as talent, it's kind of elusive because it's very hard to tell who has talent at a young age, and people that are applying themselves even a little bit will appear to be head and shoulders better than their peers, but that gap can be closed very quickly with, you know, talent and a little bit of inspiration and motivation. So, you know, when I get a young student that appears to be almost a lost cause, that my favorite thing is to find these guys, you know, suddenly having a light bulb go off and progressing quickly, because the gap, you know, unless you're tone deaf or totally musically inept, most people, once they start doing the right things, can really blossom, and you don't know what's inside people.
You have patience with your students, I hear. You're very patient with them.
Well, I like to think I am. Some students probably would say I was the meanest guy ever. I certainly don't intend to be. You know, I really try to break things down in an easy way, and you know, just get the most out of them that they can get, because everyone's different. You know, everyone progresses in a different way. And as a teacher, it's our job to find out how to help them rather than to berate them or put them in some kind of, you know, pedagogical system, because it might not work.
No, the systems don't work. You know, I've always said to a lot of the great young artists that OJT is the best way, on-the-job training. And
Well, you know, unfortunately, there's less of that than ever. I was lucky in that, you know, when I got out of college, I caught really almost the tail end of a scene that barely exists anymore. I went to Chicago, and I got some gigs with organ trios on the South Side. They didn't have a book. They had a vocalist, and they just start playing. And I'm standing there like, what the hell am I? Well, I've got to do something. So I started learning all the tunes by ear and figuring out how to play. And the audience is there. They didn't want to hear a bunch of, you know, technical nonsense. They wanted to hear me playing the music the way they expected it to sound. You know, they wanted to hear Gene M and Sonny Stitt.
Right.
They didn't want to hear some collegiate bullcrap.
No.
So I really had to kind of, you know, man up and figure out how to do it on the job training, like you said. And I was very fortunate to get a chance to, you know, be a part of that scene.
I have been following you for quite some time with One for All, and I know it's one of your best collaborators, two of them that I greatly admire in terms of their approach to music, and I always use that word, was David Hasseltine and Harold Mayburn. I'm originally from Harlem, New York City, so I was taught by Billy Taylor at a young age.
Okay, you know, he lived down the street from me. I'm in the Bronx and Riverdale, but he lived up till his last days just down the block from me.
Well, you know, he lived in Riverton across the street from me when I was a child, and he used to teach St. Mark's Grammar School in terms of teaching us music, how to read. And
it's amazing that you'd have somebody with that kind of ability and pedigree teaching at a, you know, at that, in a public school at that level. This kind of stuff doesn't exist anymore, and it's really a crying shame because we don't know what kind of talent's out there.
No, you don't.
No one's there to nurture it.
No, it was a Catholic school. His children went there, but the interesting thing about it, he volunteered his time.
Okay.
He volunteered.
Well, that's the only way things get done these days because there's no government help, little corporate help. I mean, it's people grassroots.
It's very grassroots, and you know, and when you are playing with such greats like yourself, with David Hasseltine and Jim Rotundi, and you are hard swing a bebop. Nobody wants to use that word anymore, bebop. But I can't.
I'm happy to use it.
Because I came out of the bebop era, and you just your sound. You come in, and you really grab our attention. First
well,
time I heard
that.
I mean, no, seriously, I said, who is this guy grabbing my attention like this? I want to look at a movie. but you grab attention, and how did you develop your tone, man? Your tone is so, you know.
I'm very flattered that you're bringing that up as a salient point in this interview, because to me, the most important thing always, it wasn't that I thought I had to have my own style or create. You know, people that get caught up in that, they kind of dead end because that comes out naturally. I don't think Coltrane was sitting around thinking, what can I do to freak people out?
No.
Coming out of him because, you know, he's addressing the music in a natural way. So for myself, the greatest achievement that I ever felt I could get was simply to be at a point where people could hear me for a measure and say, oh, that's Eric. Just like when you pick up the phone and your friend calls, you say, hey, Tim, you know who it is right away.
Right.
Just the sound, just to be a person. You know, that was super important to me.
You know, there's so many artists out playing it to distinguish yourself among others that are your contemporaries takes a lot of contemplation over the years. This is not microwave. I try to tell young people, this is not microwave technology. It doesn't go like that. You have to practice. And I think we live in a self-gratifying society where young people want it now.
Instant gratification.
Instant gratification. That's the word I was looking for.
Self-gratification. Maybe we won't want to go there.
But yeah, instant instant gratification. Your last release, Song of No Regrets on High Note. That's all I have to say.
Hey, look, Jay, I have something to say since you brought it up. I was kind of surprised for me, and maybe this is just it's coming out of me, but my father passed away last summer. That was part of it. A lot of things going on, maybe not feeling great about this, that, or the other thing. And when I started to put this record together, it's the first time in my life that every detail of the record is my conception. Every tune.
Really?
The instruments, the concept, and I realized all of a sudden, God, this is like a Latin record or a pop record. Well, who cares? I'm just going to do it. That's what it is. That's what's coming out. And I think because I have a certain, you know, brand name or something associated with me, like Eric, he's straight ahead. He plays hard, blah, blah. You know, I don't think critics really listened to it. They just said, yeah, it's good, but it's nothing new. And it kind of hurt me because I thought, this actually is different. And I put a lot of careful thought and heart and soul into it. And beyond that, it didn't do as well, you know, with radio play as like my previous 10 records. So I just couldn't figure it out. Very surprised.
Well, you can't go by the critics. People like a lot of times the voices that need to be heard and not heard, like mine. And they're not heard. Yeah, because I've been following you long enough. I don't like to categorize musicians, but you can do anything with that horn. I've seen you play funk on it. So I mean,
you know what? I like playing funk. You know, the next thing I'm going to do, I'm going to play so out and bizarre. Maybe that'll get me over.
Yeah.
Just, like, complete nonsense. Then they're going to say, ooh, he finally got mature.
The gatekeepers have their drawbacks, because when I heard Second Impression, the same thing, One for All. I've been following you long enough. The real thing, Chicago Fire. You were able to bring your own tone, and I heard you.
And yeah. Look, man. The Second Impression. When I got done with that date, I thought this is the end of my career, because I was on the floor with pain, back pain, and other stuff. My body was breaking down. I could barely even finish the session. I thought this is the worst thing I ever did. But then it was popular, and now the one that I did well on wasn't popular. So.
You know, sometimes
you just can't predict this stuff.
You can't predict, but you know, sometimes when you go through the sea of suffering, you know, you do better, and they don't know it. You're in
pain.
Well,
you know, that's what I thought. I actually thought that you could hear it on this record that I was a little more raw.
Right.
I didn't care if I was squelching notes and I was kind of letting it fly, you know, like somebody who's bereaved or whatever, but I guess people didn't get it.
Well, sometimes it takes a little time, especially when it comes to radio play. I think a lot of times people expect, we don't have a lot of quote-unquote full-time radio stations. There's only about 9 in the country, and everybody else is going part-time. I stick to the script. You know, if you're a good artist and you can give people a certain feeling, let them feel your spirit, boom, I'm with you all the way, 150%. And on that note, you'll be gracing Atlanta. Tell us something about what you'll be doing when you come in the band you're bringing in.
I got to be honest with you, Jay. I haven't thought even for a fleeting moment about what I'm going to do. The only thing I can promise is if people have listened to me and they're expecting something similar to what they've heard on recordings and whatnot in the past, I'll say definitely. But in terms of material, I have no idea.
That's good.
It could be any of 1,000 things. And, you know, when I'm playing with Joe, we just freewheel it. I mean, whatever comes into mind, that's it.
You got Joe Farnsworth?
Yeah.
David Hazeltine?
Well, Dave's not on this gig, is he?
No, I don't know. You tell me.
See, that's how in the dark I am. I thought I was with Joe and then some local musicians. I'm not even sure who's playing. It's embarrassing to admit that, but I have no idea.
More than likely, there's some great pianists here that will definitely take you where you want to go. No question. You know, and you.
I love getting together with people that I've never played with before, because as long as we have a certain simpatico, same musical, you know, aesthetic or musical, you know, work ethic, it's great. It can be better, you know, than playing with people you've been with forever.
Yeah. So, but you're so tight with your group, you'll have intuition. And I know Joe Farnsworth, and I follow
now,
him.
Let me say something about him, because he's the one that really put this together.
Okay.
He's another guy that I'll say it like it is, he doesn't get the credit he deserves. I mean,
no, he doesn't.
If you ask George Coleman, Benny Golson, Pharoah Sanders, I mean, he's played with all McCoy Tyner. He's played with all these guys. Cedar Walton, Junior Cook, number one choice drummer for these guys. And yet, that's the question. You know, where's his name in a reader's poll or a critic's poll?
You know, well, that's what I said. You have to be careful of the gatekeepers. In fact, one of the things that I've noticed about Joe, I've been following him for over 20 years. So I've watched him very close in terms, and then saw him perform professionally at Smoke and a few other places. So I'm glad that he's with you. You know, he can definitely bring more than enough to the table, because you have collaborated so much. Where will you be appearing?
I believe we're playing at the Velvet Lounge. Is that correct?
Right. Velvet Note. The Velvet Note.
Well, okay. Well, I screwed up today then because they wanted a video, a promotional video. So I had my 13-year-old son sit at the piano. He was horrified, but I made him play Gone Too Soon, that Michael Jackson
tune. Right, yeah.
I played along with him, and I said, hey, I'll be at the Velvet Lounge. So, well, there's another foot and mouth, but I guess they'll get
no,
it.
It's okay. I mean, Velvet Note, and you'll be there, what, Friday and Saturday this weekend?
As far as I know.
Okay.
Unless things change, you know, the guys from Cameo show up and give me a studio gig for the next 6 months.
You never know. You know, life is stranger than fiction. Any final words, my good colleague?
Well, let me see. Well, first of all, just nice to talk to somebody who's obviously astute, well-versed, and knows what they're mentioning, and, you know, so I don't have to keep making corrections or apologies. So it was a nice interview, and, I'm just excited to come down. A lot of people don't know that my father was born in Atlanta, and I haven't been there often, maybe once as a professional, and then prior to that, before my grandmother passed away, but that was like the mid-70s. But it's always kind of something I think about, and I hope that I can feel a little bit of family vibration when I'm down there, I guess.
Well, you are a family. I just want to let you know that I look forward to speaking to you when you come.
We'll
have a chance to
chat.
Now, I'll see you come. I think you're coming tomorrow, but I have a chance to. We can do a tete-a-tete. No, you need to be here more than once.
Yeah, we'll do a sit-down. I have to go out to Delaware Water Gap, Pennsylvania tonight and battle Dave Liebman, so I'm trying to get charged up.
That should be fun.
Well, you know what? It's not going to be fun if I don't get a couple jabs in there.
I know.
Trying to figure out how to get to him.
Yeah, Dave Liebman.
Well, you know, some of these guys, they're kind of impervious because they're doing their thing.
Right.
Totally different than what I'm doing, so I got to find a way to sneak a couple sucker punches in on him.
Oh,
try to draw him into my zone.
I'm drawing him right into your zone. Well, it's not.
You know what I mean? Because I'm not going into that zone.
No, it's not Mission Impossible. But I want to thank you so much once again for gracing the audience of Jazz Tones and WCLK 91.9 FM, and we look forward to you coming this weekend and leaving your indelible footprint.
All right, Jay. Thanks a lot for making it happen.
Thank you.